That's about.
Yes.
The Club Ford Orchestra continues. This is about how we finish up tonight. Saying goodnight to you, friends. Thank you for being here with me today. Thank you for helping me say farewell to our good friend, Edward. And, well, let me tell you what we've been listening to. Behind us right now is the Clubfoot Orchestra playing the music of Nino Rota. Motmos, from their newest Metallic Life review, gave us the Rust Belt. We heard Adi Gelbart from his 2008 release Mass Hypnosis by Proxy. We heard the title cut Suck Patch from 1992, seeing Grand Reissue Treatment now, Light Hits. We heard Carmine. Forever Pavot before that, from a new one on Born Bad called Melchior Volume 1. Forever Pavot is a robot who sings. Patch 1985. Wet Tuna has a new one called Vast. We heard Virtual Wildlife. Piero Piccioni from 1969 soundtrack, Amore Mio Il Tami. We heard Luna Non Sei Nessuna. And Dark Entries reissue of an 80s record by Eveline and Massau. I love called Test Pattern. We heard La Jungle en Folie. And Big Blood at the top of the set from their latest Electric Voyeur doing Eyes of Blue. My name is Scott, and I look forward to seeing you next week, friends, on Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City, Rockland County, 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Mark Hurst is next. Tectonic is coming right your way.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst, I'll be your host for the next hour. Thanks for joining. Well, I've got some good news for you. And I'm not being ironic here. It is good news coming out of big tech. I know that's kind of unusual for me to say that sentence, but in this case it's true. Not long ago, there was this giant football game on TV that a lot of people watch, and Super Bowl, and there are commercials these TV ads that are played that tout various products and services, whatever. And a lot of money goes into those commercials, of course, because there is a huge American and, I guess, to some extent, international viewing audience for the broadcast, for both the game and the commercials. And there were, as always, a lot of technology-themed commercials. But one of the companies that bought at least two ads during the Super Bowl was Amazon. And I'm going to cover, in this upcoming interview, I'm going to cover both of the commercials that that I'm aware that Amazon ran. But one in particular was the source of the good news that I'm going to tell you about. I don't know if you saw this, but it was the TV commercial for Amazon Ring. This is the networked doorbell camera, the surveillance doorbell that Amazon sells for people to put on their front door that then spies on everybody who walks past. And as you will hear in this upcoming interview, Amazon did this great thing where they actually revealed to the untold millions of people viewing the broadcast that Amazon Ring is spying on them and their neighbors. It was incredible. And so there was this huge backlash where people were returning their rings or turning off their rings or uninstalling their rings. And there was a lot of media coverage about this. And it was because the ad was so explicit that Amazon is spying on you. And part of my reaction was, well, of course, for those of us who've been involved in Tectonic over the years, I mean, whether for me or for you, the listeners, if you've been listening for a while, we've known this for years. I have been telling you this, and it's not a secret. I mean, it's not like I am the only one to reveal this, but it's known for anyone who's been paying attention. But for a lot of people out there, they just never got that understanding. And so I just want to say thank you to Amazon for finally helping to spread the message that I have been trying to get out for over 8 years now, that you, Amazon, are spying on us through your surveillance doorbell. So the guest that I have today is a friend of the show, a repeat guest, Chris Gilliard, who's a privacy expert. It's always so great to speak with Chris. And Chris and I are going to have a conversation about that commercial and some other matters around what he calls luxury surveillance, which is a phrase that he's coined that I like a lot. Oh, and by the way, if you want links to any of the stories or the ads that we're talking about, go to the Tectonic episode page, which you can find at tectonic.fm. That's T-E-C-H tonic.fm. And click the link for the Chris Gilliard episode where we're talking about Amazon. Let's go ahead now and listen to my interview with Chris Gilliard about Amazon's public admission that it's spying on us here on Tectonic. Chris Gilliard, welcome back to Tectonic.
Thanks, Mark. As always, pleasure to be here.
You've been on the show a bunch of times in the past. For anybody who doesn't know you, you're a privacy expert who's written widely on surveillance. In fact, your upcoming book for MIT Press is called Luxury Surveillance. You also post on Blue Sky at Hypervisible. But I wanted to talk about these Super Bowl commercials that Amazon ran for its surveillance platforms, Ring and Alexa. Maybe we could start with Ring. This is, of course, Amazon's surveillance doorbell. A lot of people have these now. The idea is that it records the video and audio of anybody walking by the house, you know, walking up to the front door or walking by on the sidewalk. So again, Amazon ran a Super Bowl ad on its surveillance doorbell Ring. Maybe we could listen to a few seconds of the ad just so listeners can get the context.
One post of a dog's photo in the Ring app starts outdoor cameras looking for a match. Search Party from Ring uses AI to help families find lost dogs. Since launch, more than a dog a day has been reunited with their family. Be a hero.
Okay, so Amazon here is touting this thing called Search Party, which they claim is about finding lost pets. So, Chris,
guide us through this. What is actually happening? Amazon has its surveillance doorbell. They're making a huge investment in the Super Bowl commercial, and they tell us it's just about finding lost pets.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the most damning things is the We Rate Dogs guy actually recorded a video about this, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he essentially said, this is very obviously not about finding lost dogs. And so if the We Rate Dogs guy says it's not about finding dogs, I'm pretty convinced it's not about finding dogs. I agree with him. You know, I think when we talk about Ring, it's important to get a little context. Obviously, we've talked about it quite a bit, and you and I on this show. But I think one of the most important developments in recent history with Ring is that Jamie Siminoff, I'm not exactly sure, but he's returned as the CEO of Ring. He had stepped away for a few years. And in his return, he vocalized his excitement on getting back to Ring's crime fighting, in his words, roots. That Ring for a few years had cultivated or attempted to cultivate a softer image, where Ring was supposed to be a thing that helped you create fun memories, you know, of some kid showing up for prom or a overzealous delivery guy dancing or spooky skins on the doorbell itself during Halloween when you were surveilling kids. But
the softer side, all we do is surveil 8-year-old trick-or-treaters now.
Yeah. But Ring had attempted to cultivate the softer image. In his return, Siminoff had noted or expressed his desire to get back to their crime-fighting roots. So I think a lot of how we might understand Ring is in this context.
Okay, so the founder comes back, and I believe he had a cameo in the Super Bowl commercial as well, right?
He was in the commercial, yes.
And I didn't hear him talking about crime-fighting. He was just talking about finding lost dogs. Why doesn't he just come out and say it if he's so interested in crime-fighting?
Yeah. So I think it's really interesting. You know, again, there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. Bezos, amongst other tech CEOs, has very openly aligned himself with authoritarianism. Ring has recently announced a partnership with Flock, another surveillance company known mostly for their automated license plate readers, but we're also getting into the drone business. And Flock, amongst the many things they're known for, is providing in some way or another footage or data to ICE and CBP, and also helping law enforcement do things like track women who are looking for abortions. I think that in some ways, the people at these companies know which way the wind is blowing. And so the doorbell commercial for finding lost dogs is a pretty naked attempt to try and give us a heartwarming image of the company that is really dystopian. I think it was very transparent and naked attempt to do that. And one of the ways I judge that is by the backlash on social media and the number of articles and essays I've seen since then that say exactly this, right? That it was a very transparent attempt to put a cuddly face on dystopia.
Yeah, I love the comments on the YouTube video. And I should say, I don't recommend that people use YouTube because that's also a surveillance platform run by Google. But in this one case, the comments are very satisfying because they're all negative. People are saying, I'm getting rid of my Ring today as soon as I get home. This is terrifying and creepy. And my favorite comment someone wrote, whoever came up with this ad is a genius. It's like whistleblowing without getting caught. As though the ad was designed to finally reveal to the world what Ring actually is. Because as you say, Chris, there's been a backlash. The Ring commercial did this amazing thing where they showed a zoomed out shot of a neighborhood with a little graphic showing the range of the surveillance of all of the Rings on all of the front doors in the neighborhood. And it looks like an alien invasion or something. It's all these blue circles that are carpeting the neighborhood that shows you that there is a surveillance network run by Amazon feeding data to law enforcement and possibly other agencies like ICE that are not just looking for dogs, they're looking for people. Seeing that image, people freaked out. What an amazing turn of events for a Super Bowl ad.
Yeah, frankly incredible. I think the ad did something that, you know, I haven't been able to do, or all the other activists and journalists haven't been able to do in the near decade. I mean, maybe 7 or 8 years that we've been talking about this product and Amazon in a larger sense, which is very clearly illustrate what the game is when we're talking about these technologies, that the idea of a privately run distributed surveillance network that is, you know, ostensibly looking for dogs, but could very easily be immigrants or some other enemy of the state, and that we would all, anyone with a ring anyway, would be complicit in this, is very scary, you know. And I think the other thing that to me illustrates is we often hear these narratives about how privacy is dead and how no one cares about it, and that it's not a thing that people think about, or it's a mark of privilege. Like, we hear all these sort of anti-privacy narratives and these doomerist stories about how no one cares about these things anymore. Now, I know that to not be true, but it's a very popular narrative. And part of the reason it's popular is because these tech companies are constantly pushing it. You know, we've talked about that with Meta Ray-Bans as well. But an instance like this that sort of pierces the veil or sort of breaks through illustrates that it's still a thing, that privacy is still a thing that people care about. And also in this moment, it's very clear because there are lots of forces who are using these technologies to terrorize neighborhoods and communities and imprison and kidnap our neighbors and all kinds of other very authoritarian and scary things. And so I think when people are able to see very explicitly, when it's the company itself saying, hey, this is how we're doing this, or this is how we might do this, that it's caused a lot of people to wake up.
And we should clarify that Amazon Ring has been working for years to develop close partnerships with law enforcement all across the country. I think there are thousands of local police departments that have signed on with Amazon. So basically what happens is the surveillance footage comes off of the Ring camera and gets sent into Amazon's cloud servers. And then Amazon, I guess, sells access to that footage to local law enforcement.
Well, so this is where it can sometimes get a little bit confusing. I don't know the current status. I know that at some point Amazon gave people the option of having their data encrypted. I don't know what the status of that is right now, to be honest. Also, people can have video doorbells, and Amazon is one of the companies or products that participate in this, video doorbells that feed directly into fusion centers in community, at police headquarters in particular communities. And so people's doorbells, and mostly these are sign-up programs, okay, so they do require the consent of the individual owner, but people's doorbells can feed directly into sort of real-time crime centers, that is what they call them, in local police headquarters. You know, but there's a lot of ways this data is not yours. I'll just put it that way. I mean, it's not that long ago, Alfred Ng did a story in Politico that has stuck with me for a long time. I mean, it's about 2 or 3 years old now, but that a police department was investigating someone and they were able to subpoena or get a warrant for the data of a guy. So there was a guy across the street from the person being investigated. That guy, who was not under investigation, had cameras pointing towards the street and his neighbor's house. And he also had cameras inside his house, including in his bedroom. Police were able to get a warrant for that data, not only from the footage pointing to his neighbor's house, but to the footage from inside his own house. And I repeat, like, according to the story, this person was not under investigation. And so one of the things I point out a lot to people is that these systems kind of open a window into your private life and your intimate life in some cases that you don't have control over. It might be because information is hacked or breached. It might be because of shoddy data practices that these companies have. It might be because there are workers in countries outside the US who are labeling and using that data to train AI. Or it might be because law enforcement requested that data and the company is required to hand it over. And so, I think that's I'm not sure exactly where Amazon stands on some of this stuff in terms of like end-to-end encryption and things like that at this moment. But it's important to know that when you are putting cameras on your property and inside your house, things like that, that there's always an extent to which you do not control that data.
Okay, so let's talk about this possible link with ICE. There was a story in 404 Media written by Jason Kevler, who's a past guest on this show. And I was happy to see that the story quoted you, Chris. I'm going to put a link to this on the episode page, but I'll just read an excerpt. The article is called, "With Ring, American Consumers Built a Surveillance Dragnet." This is from February 10, 2026. The article says, "Ring says it will partner with Flock, which is used by thousands of local police departments. As we have reported, some of those police departments have performed Flock license plate lookups for ICE. It's too early to say whether Ring footage will eventually end up with ICE, but it's a mask-off moment and people know it," says Chris Gilliard. "In Amazon's alliance with this administration, it's become more clear than ever that Ring is an extension of the carceral state." Well said, Chris. I mean, we don't know exactly what Amazon's tie is with ICE yet, but the signs are clear what trajectory we're on.
Yeah, and you know, they've been very cagey about it. In a lot of the recent stories, Amazon comms people have said things like, well, the partnership with Flock isn't active yet, and things like that. But that doesn't really do anything for transparency. And so, yeah, exactly. We don't know right now what that will look like. I think Amazon is probably playing a very similar game to Flock. What that game often looks like is Flock says something like, oh, it's up to the individual community how they deal with data retention practices and things like that and who they share that data with. You know, we just own the cameras. And what, you know, we've seen what that looks like. It looks like tracking people with racist, you know, using racism as a base for tracking people who are seeking reproductive care, you know, using cameras that are near and on the grounds of schools. I mean, it looks like all kinds of abuses of these technologies. And maybe it's not even accurate to call them abuses, because I think this is how they're intended to be used. And most of what Flock does, it would fall under sort of a policy of plausible deniability or semi-plausible, depending on how much you believe what Flock says.
Now, as for Amazon, the spokesperson for Amazon Ring, someone named Emma Daniels, gave a quote to The Verge and claimed that, quote, "these are not tools for mass surveillance." How should we think about that claim, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would have loved a follow-up to know what her definition of mass surveillance is. You know, I think very clearly they are. Flock and Ring, or at least Simonoff and Garrett Langley, who is the co-founder of Flock, they've been saying the same thing quite often, which is that their technologies will help to eliminate crime. Now, there was a very interesting interview with Simonoff done by The Verge. I think it was done by Nilay Patel, and I hope I'm saying his name right. But he interviewed Simonoff because, as we mentioned, he just recently came back to Ring, and he released a book called Ding Dong, about his journey as the inventor of Ring. And in the interview, the interviewer pressed him on how exactly a doorbell was going to eliminate crime. I should say that the research does not support the claim that these tools or products eliminate crime. There's no independent research that supports that. But the interviewer pressed him on it, and it wasn't a very good answer. Like, essentially, Simon Officer described this gated community with armed guards everywhere and, you know, armed guards who had been working for you for decades, and that each Ring doorbell was essentially like your own police force. And it was this really dystopian view of like what our neighborhoods should look like and what constitutes safety, you know, that they don't have any idea about what cuts down or eliminates crime. I mean, in the end, they are salespeople who want us to buy their product. For a long time, they've done that by, I think, playing into people's fears and anxieties about crime, often racialized fears and anxieties. I think lots of statistics will say that crime overall, particularly violent crime, is at a decades low in most places in the country. And so I think it's a little bit more difficult to sell the fear, so you have to make some other grandiose claim. And the way they've started to do that is to say, well, we'll eliminate crime. But they have no sense of like how it's going to do that. And when pressed, they don't really have a good answer, except the idea that if we lived in a authoritarian hellscape, that there would be less crime.
Yeah, it reminds me of Larry Ellison's much reported comment a few months back that once we have totalizing surveillance applied to all Americans, there will be no more crime because everyone will know that they're being watched.
Yeah. I mean, again, he read maybe the Cliff's Notes of 1984. I don't know. But these people, like, again, like, ultimately, what they're doing is they're trying to sell a product. It's important to remember that a lot of these things don't have any connection, any strong connection between possessing them and cutting down on crime or clearing cases or anything like that.
I also want to bring up this EFF story that was published on February 10 that pointed out that Amazon's Ring has already gotten in trouble for privacy violations. The EFF writes, in 2023, Ring settled with the Federal Trade Commission over the extensive access it gave employees to personal customer footage. Just 3 years ago, the FTC wrote, quote, as a result of this dangerously overbroad access and lax attitude toward privacy and security, employees and third-party contractors were able to view, download, and transfer customers' sensitive video data for their own purposes. So, Chris, in this case, it doesn't even take a police department coming in with a warrant, you know, to the guy across the street and saying, oh, by the way, please include your bedroom camera. I mean, that stuff is already going to Amazon employees and the third-party contractors to view at their leisure.
Yeah, I think it is really important. So as you mentioned, I'm working on this book, Luxury Surveillance. I'm doing a chapter on Ring, which has allowed me to go back and look at quite a bit of the reporting that's been done in the past 7, 8, 9 years about it. And I feel really comfortable saying that the company has historically had a very spotty record in terms of how well they protect the data and what they do with the footage. And so I don't think that Amazon is really a company to be trusted. I mean, there are reasons that go beyond Ring. I mean, we could start talking about Alexa, you know, we could talk about like sort of Amazon proper. But yeah, I don't think that it's a company that has its users' best interests at heart.
And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host. We are halfway through my interview with Chris Gilliard, privacy expert and friend of the show, talking about the Amazon Ring commercial that aired during the Super Bowl that revealed publicly to the world that Amazon, through its
surveillance doorbell Ring is creating a network of surveillance devices that then feed data to law enforcement and possibly other agencies. As you heard Chris just say, it's not just a risk of law enforcement or companies like Flock. There is a track record at Amazon of acting in untrustworthy ways with that data. And so, as Chris said, no matter how you look at it, at some point that data is not going to be yours. Which is the idea of a surveillance doorbell, after all. You know, Amazon is a surveillance capitalist. They're in the business of collecting and analyzing your private data. So, system is working as designed. If you'd like links to the stories we're talking about, go to the Tectonic episode page at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. Let's go ahead now and listen to the second half of my interview with Chris Gilliard here on Tectonic. Okay, now let's talk about Alexa a little bit. Because as I said at the beginning of the interview, the Super Bowl featured two surveillance platforms from Amazon in its commercials. One was the Amazon Ring surveillance doorbell, and the other was an ad for Amazon Alexa, which is, of course, Amazon's in-home surveillance device. They want people to put a little surveillance puck in their kitchen, their living room, wherever else, that will listen in to the audio in the room. This Super Bowl ad featured actor Chris Hemsworth and his actual wife, an actor named Elsa Pataky. And the idea in this commercial was to ridicule people's concerns about AI. They're promoting Alexa as their AI platform, I guess, for consumers. So the ad depicts outlandish scenarios of how Alexa might plot to kill Chris Hemsworth. For example, ordering from Amazon a live bear that shows up at the house and attacks him. Or Alexa automatically closing the cover on the swimming pool while Chris is swimming in it. Which I want to point out, as a brief digression, that idea was stolen from a James Bond movie. It came straight out of Thunderball. But don't tell me that AI has something to do with plagiarism, Chris, because then I'll really start to get nervous. Anyway, so I just thought this was a really interesting commercial because it's an example of reductio ad absurdum, this idea that we're going to take the other side in the argument and we're going to make their concerns look silly and thereby making our ideas look strong or reasonable by comparison. So Amazon is trying to defang the criticisms of our team that AI has all these harms by saying, oh, what do you think it's going to do? Order you a live bear? And I don't know how effective the ad was at making their case or maybe creating a backlash, but I thought it was a really interesting gambit for Amazon to, in a way, try to make fun of the concerns that you and I and the rest of our team have been bringing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the joke is in particularly poor taste because we know, for instance, the multiple episodes, just that we know of chatbots encouraging self-harm, stalking, a suicide, you know, and other things that have gained the label of AI psychosis. So the idea that the harms associated with chatbots that are stuffed into things like Alexa, you know, the idea that these harms are a joke, I think is in particularly poor taste. And so you don't need a bear to come to your house when, you know, chatbots and large language models have, you know, advised people to eat poisonous mushrooms and given them the specs on how to tie a proper noose and which part of the house to hang it from. So I don't find it funny at all.
Yeah, and I mean, we could do a whole show just on the harms of AI and its associated algorithms, but one of the other major I'm doing heavy air quotes here, advances in consumer AI recently is this idea that agents are going to go out and negotiate the best deals for, you know, plane tickets or some other thing you want to buy on your behalf. And this is coming at the same time that we're reading reports of what's called surveillance pricing, where the companies get all the surveillance data on you and they use the algorithm to jack the price up as high as possible so that it's just one penny under the highest possible price you'd be willing or able to pay. It's so transparent that the use of AI in this way to act as an agent is to work for the company's benefit, not ours.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to think about is OpenAI now in their less expensive tier and their free tier, they're now introducing ads. And so I think we've seen already, there have been dozens and dozens of examples of these systems working in ways that are detrimental to their users, you know? And so the idea that some kind of AI agent is going to work for you in your best interest rather than the company's, I think is a little bit ridiculous. And also I come back a lot to what Meredith Whitaker talks about, you know, Meredith Whitaker, the CEO of Signal, talks about when she talks about agents, you know, agentic AI. And again, like I'm using air quotes now too, that I don't know how well these things will ever work. I know that right now they don't work in the ways that the companies would have us believe. But if they are to work in that way, right? So let's suppose for a moment that they will do the things, some of the things that the companies say they will. The level of access that these would require to people's lives is very nightmarish and is surveillance capitalism on a level that we've not seen, and which is why it's so appealing to these companies, that it would need to know everything, right? So like a simple thing like, schedule me a doctor's appointment, okay? So it would need to know, or I'll go even one more dystopian layer down, schedule my child's doctor's appointment. The amount of information it would need to do that somewhat autonomously, including what conditions your child has, where your child's going to be at a particular time or place, you know, your schedule, like on and on and on and on, that it would require us providing in one central pot so much data about us that it's kind of scary to think of in terms of like how companies might leverage that. And we don't need to sort of speculate because we've already seen, like if we think about the kinds of categories data brokers use, for instance. So, you know, I know that you've talked about data brokers quite a bit. I think to this day, a thing I like to point out to people, and I don't like to point it out because it's fun or anything, but just sort of as a point of reference, that data brokers have categories on people like has a terminal illness or had a child die in an auto accident or something like that. This is the kind of information that companies are allowed to gather on us, dossiers they're able to keep on us in order to target ads towards us. The idea that we would centralize this and make it more powerful, again, to me is a very nightmarish scenario, and one I certainly would not look forward to.
What do you say to the people? I'm sure you've heard this response, Chris, in your conversations with folks when they say, well, I hear what you're saying about all of the risks and the harms and everything, but I used AI just the other day for such and such a task, and it was actually really helpful. I want to hear what you say. What I generally tell people is I'm not against the idea of automation using digital technology. You know, like, I don't know, 20 years ago, I wasn't trying to ban macros in Excel or something. You know, like setting up an automated set of steps is in the abstract pretty neutral. I mean, it depends on what you put it towards, I guess. But the environment we're in right now is there's just a small handful of major AI platforms that are being provided by all the same freaking big tech monsters that I've been covering for over 8 years on this show. They have a horrific track record. And so why would we think that suddenly this latest release from these companies, whether it's Microsoft or OpenAI or Google, Amazon, any of them, suddenly it's going to be something that for real this time is to your benefit? Of course not.
Yeah. A thing I consistently point out is that some of the actual worst people in the world, in some case, literal Nazis, are saying to us, we have a machine that can be your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your partner, your coach, your financial advisor, your doctor, your therapist, and your teacher. Now, if I just gave you that information, that Nazis and authoritarians have said, hey, we have like a magic machine that's going to be everything to you and for you. Like, if I just gave you that information, like, the most people would say no. and rightly so. You know, at this very moment, there are Black and brown communities across this country whose air is being poisoned by the data centers that are powering this technology. And I think, too, it's important to understand these technologies for what they are. That if people had come along and said, well, we have a thing that will like help you write emails faster, and that's that, right? Or we have this thing that, you know, you can create cool and funny cartoons of yourself. I mean, if you're interested, it's not a thing I'm interested in, but like if that had been the thing, then okay, you know, again, like considering some of the harms I've mentioned or the facts I've mentioned, like I would still reject them. But what they've come along with is that we have this thing that is borderline magic that will do everything. And in the process of doing that, they've also talked with a degree of glee about things like putting people out of work, you know, particularly artists and teachers and musicians and things like that, but also, you know, white collar workers. And so I think that the degree to which this technology exists as a means of, say, controlling labor. Well, let me use like a particular example. I think for lots of people who use Google search, that they've recognized that in the last couple of years, it's been significantly degraded. Google is aware of this, so it's not like a thing I'm making up. Like Google has acknowledged this in court. It's been significantly degraded, and Google is putting more resources into its AI summaries. And so I think it's important, again, to think about what is the purpose of that? So part of what is going on there is that these companies are trying to control information and data and provide us with an answer, you know, that is often much more favorable to the tech companies for information that we might look to and for. I think the most extreme examples of this are when people look to Grok for things, but to suggest that the other companies aren't doing it as well, that these systems and products don't have some kind of ideological bent, you know, I think would be a severe misreading of that. Again, when some of the worst people in the world tell you they have an answer to your question, I think it's something that we should interrogate. And I don't think it's so easily separated from, you know, I used it to make an image of me in the style of Miyazaki. You know, like, I think all of these things are connected. I don't think there's sort of innocent uses of these things. And so if people are getting value out of it, you know, okay. I mean, I typically don't argue with people in that realm, but I think it's important to interrogate what the larger project is with these products, and why these companies are so invested in telling us that it can be our everything.
Yeah, and normalizing that as an idea. I mean, I think that's another thing that Amazon was trying to do with these Super Bowl commercials, is go to the biggest public stage on TV that they can find and present surveillance as this normal, reasonable, expected experience of living in suburban America today. You're going to be surveilled by us, and it's okay. And maybe it's even a little bit fun. I think that's another risk of any kind of use of these big tech AI platforms, is that you're then normalizing the use of that for other things as well.
Yeah. And I should point out, too, we already have a technology or a series of technologies for locating and returning lost pets. And it doesn't involve, surveilling everyone who walks by your house. You know, we have a thing and it works pretty well. And it's been working pretty well for decades. And so what a lot of these technologies do is they offer us the elimination of friction or the illusion of convenience in return for extreme amounts of surveillance. The ad fell flat, right? So people were not fooled, right? But I think if I were to like take the position of the people who created the ad or the people who greenlit it or whatever, they're like, oh, like everybody loves dogs, you know, let's sort of shoehorn or Trojan horse this surveillance system in under the guise of that. But we already have ways to get dogs and other pets back home when they're lost. And it doesn't require like a dragnet.
Oh, my favorite, and I think we've talked about this before, is when AI companies will come out and say, finally, we have a device you can wear that'll tell you if you got a good night's sleep or not. Because at no point in human history have humans been able to self-diagnose their quality of sleep in the morning.
Yeah. I saw an article for a patent today that would connect your smart ring to your thermostat.
I saw that.
Like, I mean, what happened to turning the pillow over, you know? I think it's probably better for us in the long run.
Well, Chris, do you think we could monetize turning the pillow over? I mean, maybe there's some, like, every time you turn your pillow over, you have to pay us some cryptocurrency. Pillow coin, how about that? This is how these guys think.
Yeah.
There's one other news bit I wanted to bring up before we close. And this is a piece from SF Gate out of San Francisco on February 7, 2026. And the headline says it all. ICE mobile app scans protester's face, then revokes her TSA pre-check status. And I'm not laughing at this being funny. I'm laughing at how horribly dystopian this is. The facial recognition, which we've talked quite a bit, has so many problems with it. Now it's being weaponized by ICE, not simply against people they're hunting down, but they're turning their facial rec against protesters. And then that feeds into some sort of government algorithm to start removing their privileges at airports.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the stories that is going to play out for decades is the removal of the different data silos that typically have protected Americans' data. The linking of different things like, you know, voter rolls and public assistance and, you know, taxes and all those things. The connection of all that data that's been enabled by this administration and the theft of it by people in the name of this administration is a story that is going to, I think, play out in some really scary ways for years to come. I mean, this is really, you know, I just use this word, but I use it again. It's really scary because these things we're talking about are, in terms of protesting and making your voice heard, are supposedly constitutionally protected activities that we would surveil people and in any way punish them, you know, or even identify them for that matter. I think is a sign of just how lawless things are at this point. It's unfortunate because these are all the kinds of things that journalists and activists, people like yourself, you know, scholars of privacy and surveillance have been screaming about for decades, that the ability to easily and seamlessly identify people who just are doing the things that they do by appearing in public, and then to track them down or somehow punish them for doing those things, you know, is a sign of, like, we do not live in a free society. I think we did not have to be here. And I think it's a long way back, unfortunately, but this is very much predictable. And I think it's very sad that that's where we are.
Well, for anybody who wants to keep on top of the latest news of our slide away from a free society and towards a surveillance state, I would highly recommend people subscribe to your Blue Sky feed. It's at Hypervisible, and I'll put a link to that on the episode page. Chris Gilliard, this has been, I'm looking for a good adjective. I'm trying not to say depressing, but this has been a helpful chat once again. Thanks for taking the time to walk us through what's happening in the world of surveillance, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again on the show.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me, and anytime.
And we're back. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the remaining 10 or so minutes. We just heard my interview with Chris Gilliard, privacy expert and author of the forthcoming book, Luxury Surveillance, talking about a couple of TV commercials that Amazon bought and ran during the Super Bowl, which is some sort of televised football game here in the U.S. And both of the Amazon ads went to great lengths to discuss their abilities to surveil American consumers, one with Ring, the surveillance doorbell, and one with Alexa, which is this AI chatbot thing that's embedded in the surveillance pucks that Amazon wants people to put all around their houses to bug their houses. And there was an important news item that came out just after Chris and I spoke that had to do with the Amazon Ring news. Now, you heard Chris and me talk about the possible link to ICE through an upcoming partner of Amazon Ring called Flock, which is most known for its surveillance of license plates. Well, The Verge on February 12, 2026, ran a piece with the headline, Ring cancels its partnership with Flock Safety after surveillance backlash. So, like I told you, there was a huge backlash in the media and in social media after people saw that amazing Amazon commercial showing that Ring is, in fact, actually spying on everyone. And so here's what The Verge writes. Following intense backlash to its partnership with Flock Safety, a surveillance tech company that works with law enforcement, Ring has announced it is canceling the integration following recent unrest across the country related to ICE activities, public pressure against the Amazon-owned Ring's involvement with the company started to mount. So I think part of it came from the backlash due to that TV commercial, and part of it came from the ongoing horror of what ICE is doing to the citizens and the residents of Minneapolis. And so some people are saying, well, see, you know, Amazon is on the right side here. It has decided not to work with Flock after all. And I will grant that is one tiny step in the right direction, but Amazon really is showing no interest in making the structural changes necessary to remove the harms from its surveillance network. I mean, I could say a few things. First of all, Amazon has said that it's not working with Flock for now. I mean, we have seen big tech companies make these big PR announcements, and then 6 months later, 12 months later, they very quietly come back and make the partnership anyway. Number two is, let's say they don't end up not working with Flock. There are other surveillance companies out there that have similar technology
to take and analyze that data and share it with other partners. There you can see on the episode page, you can see that Amazon works with a surveillance company called Axon, which was made its name through the taser, but has branched out to other things as well. So that's another possible vector of this. And another response is that, as a USA Today article pointed out on February 12, it can be relatively easy to access such camera systems using credentials found online or in data privacy leaks, even without the consent of the owner, which is to say, these things can be hacked. So even if they're not working with Flock and Axon and all the rest, these devices can still be hacked. A networked surveillance camera is liable to share your data with third-party actors, no matter what you do, because it's a surveillance camera that is taking your private data and sending it off into the cloud. And that just invites harm. Even if it was not hacked and not shared anywhere else, Amazon still has access to your private data and is doing who knows what kind of analysis and or AI training on your private data that will then come back to bite you later, and all of us, as we careen into a surveillance state. This reminds me that there's another ongoing surveillance story that has to do with Nancy Guthrie, who is the mother of the TV anchor Savannah Guthrie, a horrible story that this woman, Nancy Guthrie, in her 80s, was abducted from her home. And there is just a little bit of footage. She has a surveillance doorbell from Google. It's a Google Nest. And what people have pointed out is that law enforcement was able to get the footage from her Google Nest, even though Nancy Guthrie's Google Nest was not signed up to store the footage at Google. So even when these cameras and the big tech companies say, oh, don't worry, we're not storing the footage, there is a way. There is a way. At least there was in this case. And I want to play you just a one-minute explainer from Drew Harwell, who's at the Washington Post, who talked about this, what happened in that case. Here it is.
When the FBI shared this doorbell camera video of Nancy Guthrie's kidnapper, it raised this huge question of how they even got this footage. For 10 days, they had been saying she didn't have a subscription to save the video, and most people assume that without a paid plan, the footage just disappears. But here's the answer. Doorbell cameras are always watching. When they're activated by motion or the app, they start recording and they send that data to the company's servers. For Nest, that's Google. For Ring, that's Amazon. Even if you don't pay, all that footage from your doorstep goes to Google and Amazon. They can keep it however long they want. What you're paying for is so that you can see the footage. Even when you open your app to see the live camera feed, that video is not coming from your doorbell. It's coming from the company servers. The data can be stored for weeks or months, whether you pay or not. And these companies work with law enforcement to share that data. Again, they don't care if you have a subscription. This is a horribly sad case. I hope they catch this person. But I also think people need to better understand how these things work, because Google and Amazon are trying to roll these cameras out everywhere. You saw the Super Bowl ad with Ring talking about how they can turn on cameras across entire neighborhoods to look for missing dogs. In other words, it's a giant private surveillance network that only the companies really get to see. How many of these cameras do you walk or drive past in a typical week? Where do you think all this data about you ends up?
Where do you think all this data about you ends up? Indeed, well put by Drew Harwell. I hope that this episode has illuminated some of the stakes that we are facing as a society in the U.S. and in Europe and beyond as the big tech companies continue the spread of this surveillance equipment, these privately owned surveillance networks that are feeding data to law enforcement and other third parties. And as Drew Harwell pointed out, if you're paying for the paid tier, that's just so that you get to watch the video footage. Your data is going directly to big tech to be analyzed and shared and monetized however they want. You have no agency in that matter. So the I'm going to give you some homework in a second. That's about all of the information I have time to give you this evening. I do have some homework for you for next time, and you know what it is. Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. You are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. To go out today, we're going to hear a song, thanks to my friend Roger for suggesting it, called
Beans on, no, it's called Alexa by Beans on Toast. Have a great week, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Alexa, can you hear me? Alexa, are you listening? Stupid question, course you are. You're recording everything. You're monitoring everything that happens in this house. And you're painting a digital picture of us. Well, how do we look? What did you find out? I know you know the kind of music that we like, and the books that we read, the films that we watch. Now you can make suggestions based on previous purchases. You organized a Wagamama on Deliveroo. I got a shower curtain and an ice cream scoop, 6 light bulbs and a brand new bell delivered to the front door of my house, individually wrapped in cardboard packaging, 5 times the size of the item it was carrying. I've been buying more and more from Amazon recently. Alexa, can you hear me? Alexa, you're so clever, you're so well informed, you can predict the weather and the next news report, and it's not really spying, it's just collecting easy to think how much the mindset has changed and how much of our lives we're willing to give away. Well, I remember privacy used to be important, now we're bugging our own houses in the name of convenience.
Let's try that again. The mysteries of Studio B here at FMU. We've moved over to our other studio in preparation for the fundraiser, which starts in a couple of weeks and will be broadcast from Studio B, but all is under control now. Anyway, good evening and welcome. The show is called It's Complicated, an hour of prog and prog adjacent music. I am your host, Dave Mandel. And it is a pleasure to be here as I update the online playlist. Lots of great music coming this evening for you. And I'm going to start, just by amazing coincidence, I seem to have a bunch of music from Sydney, a bunch of bands from Sydney, Australia this evening. So I'm going to start with one of them now. Most of what I have tonight, it seems, is recent, relatively recent, only like one or two older tracks. So a bunch of recent stuff and a bunch of things from Sydney. And we're going to start with a track from a group called Kurushimi. And this is going to be something from an album released in 2016. That's recent, right? From a self-titled album. And this is the band Kurushimi.